The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Well, the situation is that we're kind of a bit marooned at the moment. The Manxman is just sitting there, looking leisurely. Something's wrong with her, but they're not saying what it is. Something may be needed to repair it, but they're not saying what it is. The Bemercree's replaced the Manxman, but she's sitting there, not doing anything. And the vessel that, whose generators broke a couple of times last month is currently on duty. And the Arrow, of course, has been rented to DFDS. It's doing the Portsmouth to Jersey run. And at the moment, the Arrow is sitting just off the Isle of Wight. So, as it stands at the moment, getting freight on and off the Isle of Man is something of a challenge, not to mention getting the passengers who are coming to the MGP on and off the Isle of Man something of a challenge. Anyway, we've spoken to Brian Thompson. We'll be hearing from Mr. Thompson fairly shortly. I just wonder whether you've got any thoughts on this. Thank the Lord we own it now, because at least it's our problem. it's a Manx problem, isn't it? Text, email, call or WhatsApp. What's on your mind today? Oh, the good news is about the Queen is, did you hear this? 7 weeks into the 2025 Queen scallop season, landings are strong and the shellfish is of very high quality, apparently. The current quota provides for each boat fishing for Queen is to land up to 11 tonnes a week. And to date, over 29% of the total allowable catch has been brought ashore. So well done to the boys on the Queen is at the moment. That's really good news. Lots of messages we didn't get to yesterday. We were talking a lot about fly tipping, and that will come up today. So I had lots of messages about fly tipping and people telling me where fly tipping was taking place and really what we can do about it. In Oban, the electrics are tested on arrival at the amenity site. If the electrics are still in working order, they're sold on at a nominal fee. So it is with anything that can be used by somebody else, says Liz. That's Oban on the west coast of Scotland. Of course, now you can't really, and charity shops won't accept electric goods anymore, so that really doesn't happen. They're closing down the opportunities for recycling stuff. And I suppose the concept of mending electrical goods is fairly redundant now, as stuff just gets thrown away. Something gets broken. The concept of, I mean, can you remember when there used to be things called TV repairmen? Full-time job. Most shops that sold televisions had a TV repairman, sometimes two, with a workbench at the back and a van to take stuff out and about, hauling those enormous tubes around, vacuum tubes around. Nowadays, television goes wrong, that's it. Just get a new one. So that is our throwaway society. But it has to be said, as consumers, we didn't ask for it. It was the industry that brought this to us, just like we, the consumers, didn't ask for glass milk bottles to be replaced by plastic ones. That was their idea. They may say it was more convenient for us, but it was even more convenient for them. And there are some people, of course, some dairies that still operate with glass milk bottles. The ultimate in recyclability. Use them, wash them, use them again. We didn't ask for this. We didn't ask for paper carrier bags to be replaced by plastic bags. That was their idea. So don't accept it if people say, you know, it's the consumer that's wasting all this. We didn't ask for it. We were happy with fresh food and tins and a bit of frozen. All the plastic stuff and the polystyrene trays and everything, that's their idea. That's the food industry's idea. And all the pollution and the recycling problem and the plastic mess, that was their idea. There was no big consumer revolution in the 1970s to say we demand plastic packaging. There wasn't. So if anybody tries to tell you that it's your fault, it's not. Here's Juan now. Hello, Juan.
How are you today, Andy?
Very well. Glad I'm not on the boat. Put it that way.
And that brings me to my first point, which is the sustainability and our food sustainability. And I go back to the statement that Claire Barber made to someone some time ago, of what's our food sustainability? And her answer was the Manxman. That's not going to sit very well this morning, is it?
Well, the problem is, you know, it's, and I don't know, and anybody can correct me on this, but she's an electric vessel. I mean, basically, she's the equivalent of an EV in a boat. And that's the whole issue. Whereas before, if you had a diesel, a marine diesel engine, you could fix the darn thing. Somebody would know how to fix it. As it is, I believe they're looking for a part, and presumably they didn't keep it in the spares room. So we're waiting and waiting and waiting. She's a gorgeous vessel, but the trouble is, every time this happens, people doubt whether she's the right vessel.
And of course, going green on the bill probably hasn't helped in effect with this, because the propulsion on the back of it's not diesel to electric propulsion, is it? They've gone for another system, which is obviously not given enough talk to get into the harbours.
Well, she had, yesterday morning we watched her come in around 7 o'clock-ish with the tug by her side all the way around. The tug was with her all the way from the outskirts of the bay.
Yes. Yeah. My main point, Andy, I was just going to drop back on what we were talking about yesterday and just doing a little bit of homework last night. From a statement, it seems to be Currys and other stores seem to build in the charge of recycling into the sale. And that seems to be, it's not a trend with everyone in the UK, but a lot of the multiples do this. So consequently, I was correct on the charge of 25 to 30 odd pound, which they're charging to take it away. Amenity sites don't seem to have the same grace. I was listening there with John Quay's points yesterday and the costs and everything. And again, I really have to stand by the profiteering on the part of this, because when the new contractor came in, I think government signed the contract with this in the 1st of January, and the prices went up as over 50-60%, I think we were looking at last night. So my question still is, why did them prices go up so much? And listening to John, who's Manx Independent, I think, which is, I think that's all now trade distribution, isn't it? I think that deal's just been done. So I believe that trade distribution, they carried all the stuff for Currys anyway. So if they're all using the same people going over, I'm not sure where the disproportion is in the costings. I think Bonzo was kind of right in what he was saying yesterday, that, you know, that we shouldn't be bearing the charge. And I think there's an excess of about 750,000 which the government make on the charges. I might be wrong on that, but that's what we're looking at. So,
and this is part of it, June, is the whole thing about trying to berate us, the customers, into think that it's our fault. Now, you know, if the industry, and this is, and I think this, what's that globe? There's a European kind of collective that's represented, Euronics, that's it, Euronics. So Euronics is a Dutch kind of international association of independent electric retailers. And I understand the Euronics are part of this deal whereby when you buy something from your Euronics dealer, you're paying for the disposal already. Or you are in Europe, put it that way.
You are in Europe, but not necessarily here. We actually looked at Euronics as well, and Euronics, I think Moran TV do Euronics here, but their prices for taking stuff back is higher. Currys is the cheapest. But on what you were saying there, we were led to believe on this charges to start with, it was for the Freon and all the other insulation on fridges and freezers was a cost for stripping that down.
Yeah.
But now with this new charge that they've signed into with this Wii, it's any electrical item that has an electrical circuit board or wire on it. So this again, and I still stand by profiteering, because a washing machine surely used to be scrap metal. And now, because they've brought a new directive and new rule in, it's now not scrap metal anymore, because it has an electric wire going to it. if you're in the business of stripping stuff down and you've got wire stripping, there's a lot of copper to be gone out of that stuff if you've got the right materials to do it. So there's lots of profit getting made in this business. And again, like I said, we're getting charged here for it. And like you said there, Andy, we're getting told that we're the bad people for doing this.
Well, it's like, almost like they're trying to shame us to say it's your fault and you've got to be, you know, to be green, you must agree to this. And by the way, you're going to pay as well for it. I got a note in from Eric last thing yesterday who said he took a couple of admittedly quite long domestic extension cables and was told they're electrical appliances because they've got plugs on them, plugs and sockets on them, and was told it's an it's a flipping extension cable.
Yeah. And this is the craziness of it. And this came in from the 1st of January. So as before, you may be able to go and put your washing machine to the scrap metal place. Now you have to go through this regulation. And this is the craziness of where we are, aren't we, in this world at the moment. So, as the American policeman once said to me, keep drinking the Kool-Aid.
Okay. Thank you, Julian. Thank you. It's 17 minutes past 12. If you're in the scrap metal business, by the way, I'd like to hear what your opinion is of all this. Has trade gone down? Can you take as much scrap metal as you used to be able to? Could you? I mean, time was when you could take a fridge or a freezer or a washing machine to a scrap metal dealer. Can you still now? David's with us now. Hi, David.
Hi, Andy. I just want to say that yesterday, talking about recycling and stuff like that, just to let people know, and I must speak now on behalf of Onken, but Douglas Onken, Braddon, Garth and Satin actually own the Middle River site, which is the new one near the Energy from Waste plant. We own that lock, stock and barrel. No government help at all. So we actually, any money we make on, say, recycling the goods will go back into paying the bills for the operation there. And I just want to put that on record.
And just say that, which venue is that again? Which is that?
The Mill River site.
Right,
now,
okay.
Down near the Energy from Waste facility. Or you call it something different, don't you?
Yes.
But I was just going to say there, it's all down to, you see, people forget all the time. You've got to do, when you do things right, you've got to do it by law, by regulation, and acts of maybe timbered. So all these things have got to be taken in, dismantled. We can't just do things anymore. Years ago, they used to pat test stuff, you know, perfectly good stuff, and then give it away or nominal fees. But we can't do that anymore now because there's a thing of liability as well.
Yeah.
And nobody wants to have liability, do they, if something
happens? So is that why the charity shops won't accept electrical goods anymore, just in case somebody fuses something and blows themselves up?
Yeah, and it's a claim culture now, and hopefully we're not too far down that particular road. It's the same with mattresses, chairs. If you haven't got the label on it, do you know the little label when you lift the cushion up?
Yeah.
And it said this material's not is fire retardant,
right?
Or it doesn't say it is. If it doesn't have the label on it, they're binned, crushed, and then go to the Energy from Waste plant to produce electricity. But people forget that, don't they? That's what I was going to try and put on to. And Bonzo's little thing, because I was waiting or hanging on the line and he mentioned my name, and I'm just going to say, we don't fight between local government and local government or local authorities and government. Is we have discussions, but when those discussions are one-sided, that's when the local authorities get together. And don't forget, in October we meet the MLCs and we talk about the local government bill, which Mr. Hooper did, and with the minister, she blessed it as well. Although it was the council minister saying that they shouldn't have done to bring in some more regulation, because we're getting over-regulated, aren't we, Andy? That's the biggest thing.
And the public, the general public, David, I would imagine now, and I've spoken to people who said they scratch their head when we hear this, that central government and local government are sometimes at loggerheads, and they wonder why. The public wonder, in that everybody's supposed to be serving the public, you know, they're civil servants and public servants, why foil out about things? Why are there disputes between central and local government?
Well, I'll give you a prime example of that is 20 miles an hour. And that's the one that shoots right to the top of the tree, doesn't it? The Banksy we got now in Onchan, which says a certain minister was responsible for putting the pole in. I remember her saying to the media that pole was going to be changed. Well, it's been tarmacked in, and the graffiti now is round the pole, and it's a major tourist attraction on Hillbury Road. And I remember the guys that were doing it when they hit the cable in the pavement because they were in the wrong place. But hey ho, we still haven't had the answers for Douglas and Onchan, have we? And I don't blame the minister, Anne, for the schools and stuff like that. But everybody wanted that. Reduce the speed near schools, and we need to do a few more of it, one in Onchan. But there's a couple of places I think should have been added to it, but we haven't heard anything from it. And she promised some time ago, too, at a meeting I was at anyway, to say where these electrical points were going to be next to the poles. But have you had a response, or have I had a response? The answer is no. There's nothing in the public domain telling me where they are. So that's outstanding. And the biggest thing that happened today was, do you know that document I said about how the world is in the Isle of Man, the consultation over the internet?
Yeah.
Well, we've got the paperwork, and me and this mature lady will be dealing with that tomorrow. And she said to me, she's got a massive packet of paper that's come through her door. But, as I would say to people there, not everybody's on the internet. So why do they send people, there is a piece of paper that says that if you need a paper version, please give us a ring. Well, I did it, and it came yesterday. So I've got that. So, Andy, if you want a copy, you'll get one. Okay. But I'll tell you, we don't get the results, do we?
Well, you would hope we would.
Well, let's go through them. The commercial vehicles, heavy goods vehicles in the Isle of Man, that was done some time ago. That's over a year old. What happened there? Who's at fault? DOI. Traffic, potholes, all these things. Ring this number, and if it's they consider it is a danger, they will treat that as an emergency or do it within a few days. I don't blame the lads at all that's doing the work or get to do the work. A is, have they got the money? And how much does it cost to have an expert on black tar? £40,000.
Wow.
Eh?
I know.
What are we doing? We can get that off the internet. The boys here on Manx Radio would get that for us straight away.
Okay. All right. Thanks for calling today.
See you. Bye.
Cheers now. Isle of Man businesses are now going to be able to sell goods globally on Etsy following successful collaborations led by the Palmer for Enterprises executive agencies, Digital Isle of Man and Business Isle of Man. Etsy now supports Etsy payments for businesses based on the island, removing a barrier that previously prevented them from selling on the platform. Access to the service required to operate to shop fully on the platform is now live. Are you an Etsy seller? Etsy payments allow sellers to get paid on Etsy and offer preferred customer payment methods. Until now, the Isle of Man wasn't a supported location, restricting access for Manx businesses. Julian's with us now. Hi, Julian.
Hi, Andy. How you doing?
Very well, thanks. Glad I'm not on the boat.
I wonder if they're applying the same maintenance schedule as they do to the roads. Perhaps that's what the problem is. I don't know. If they need a spare part, though, they went to a South Korean Hyundai Mipo, so it might take a while to get the part, possibly. I also hear rumours that when they made the Manxman, they didn't properly design the cooling pipes for the rear bow thrusters. And I hear that it's causing such bad coolant cavitation at the curvature points that it's eroding the inside of the cooling pipes. So it's kind of difficult to apply full power. So whether that's true or not, but a little bird told me. Just one other little catch-up point. Someone texted in yesterday accusing a student at the Junior Tynwald of being related to someone who's against the Carevi wind farm. Well, there's also a student that was participating that's related to an MHK, and you also had the chair of the MUA seconding the motion, which is hardly unbiased, and there's several offspring of people in government who are now quite in influential positions. So I think we need to keep that... fair.
That's assuming that every child takes a blind bit of notice of what their parent thinks.
Well, correct. Yeah, absolutely. Just a little heads up. I noticed that Tesco's finest rump steak at its normal price is 60% more expensive than getting it locally from Tiers Butchers. 60% more expensive. Tesco's has currently got an offer on their finest rump steak, but it's still 36% more than buying it from local butchers like Tiers. So if people want to save money in this rapidly getting more expensive world, perhaps they need to shop local, because on the normal price, 60% more expensive is quite shocking, really. Fly tipping and all the rest of it is quite interesting, listening to John Quay yesterday. I noticed, though, that when you look at the amount of money that's spent on lithium-ion batteries for tipping, it's quite a lot more expensive than handling, you know, fridges, even with the CFCs, theoretically, that are in the older ones. Which he was saying, you know, he needs to hire special fireproof containers. He has to go through this persistent organic pollutants transfrontier shipment regulations. But I noticed that if you were to compare, say, those drill batteries with an EV, you'd almost need 3,000 of them to make up one decent-sized EV battery. And I also noticed that IATA, which is the International Air Transport Association, in their dangerous goods regulations, section 2.3, states that the largest lithium-ion battery pack allowed in an aircraft cabin is about 1,000 times smaller than an EV battery due to risk of fire. So when we're talking about the boat again, if the hauliers are spending extra money trying to shift spent drill batteries, and you know, they've talked about EVs being £6,000 to get it off the island, you've got to ask the question, why is it, even with their management systems, isn't there more scrutiny on what's being loaded on the boat? Because there's lots of talk amongst the ferry companies of either banning them outright or even having separate areas on the boat that can, you can literally fling them off the side if they start to go up, which makes you wonder. Mm. Duren mentioned about the costings. It's interesting. If you go on Curry's website and pretend to go and buy a fridge, they will collect it for £30, your old one. So a rough guide is about 750,000 collected from the extra that they'll collect from these extra tip charges across the island. But I noticed that Tynwald authorised £46.8 million in government departmental overspend. So you had DHSC at £30 million, you had DESC at £8.9 million, Department of Infrastructure went over by £5.6 million, and Home Affairs went over by £2.2 million. So you've got almost £50 million overspend, and they're doing tip charges that might get to £750,000. And it's interesting to note that in the UK, since they've been increasing their WEEE charges and all the rest of it, they've got a 22% increase in fly tipping. And they reckon in about 9 years' time, the cost of cleaning up the fly tipping will be the same as the revenue, even if they boost that up a bit. So I'm just wondering if it's counterproductive to introduce these charges, because it's just, at the end of the day, it's going to cost a lot of money to go up on the hillsides. I mean, if you remember, there was a sofa and chairs and everything up near the Llewellyn Road at the top near the mines up there at Foxdale. So if this is going to increase, what is the advantage of this? And at the end of the day, you're going to end up with a worse quality of life, because you're going to, it's not nice on our beautiful island having sofas and fridges and God knows what thrown in the hillsides.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Julian, we appreciate it. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Andy. Cheers.
Nick dropped me a note just to say, regarding the fly tipping on Marine Drive, it's appalling that people can do that in a beautiful place like Marine Drive. I'd love to go and help clean it up. As for the Braddon commissioners, it probably fall on deaf ears because Braddon's responsible for Marine Drive. I reported two yellow TT course fencing panels placed near the old railway station in Union Mills have been thrown into the river by presumably locals, whether children or whoever. I informed the commissioners and they're still there. So I'm going to do it myself. The island's becoming an embarrassment where this is concerned. Somebody also dropped a note in to say there's a place on Palace Road. Palace Road's the top end of Empire Terrace, isn't it? Where there's a building site there and somebody's been just dropping. So I think somebody's doing a building up there and somebody's just been fly tipping on the drive where they're building. Presumably thinking they'll bung it in a skip. There's nothing really you can say, is there, to people who fly tip? I don't know. What would their response be if you said, look, you shouldn't put that there? What do you say to somebody like that who wants to throw stuff where they're not supposed to and not take responsibility for it? You just wonder what their houses are like. Well, probably a lot, probably very clean. Bonzo's on now. Hi, Bonzo.
Hello, yes. Hearing David talking about discussions between central and local government. Yeah. I dare say what we used to call full and frank discussions, i.e. shouty, with rude words occasionally sometimes in them. But going back to, going on to the waste disposal issue, the reason why in Europe you can actually get them to take it away for you and it doesn't cost you anything is because of that dreadful institution that Juan and Julian and others absolutely go mad about, the EU, because it's part of an EU directive called the EU's Waste Electrical and Electronic Equipment Directive, which also goes under the unfortunate acronym of WEE. don't know anybody thought that one through. But that made EU member countries have to put into their own laws the recommendations of the directive. That's what directives do. An EU regulation applies everywhere immediately. But an EU directive, countries get a certain amount of time in order to put it into their own domestic laws.
Right.
And one of the key points, of course, is that member states must establish systems for the separate collection of WEE, including free take-back systems for consumers. Now, I don't know the history in the UK at the moment of that, whether it was the case that you could oblige people to take back for free, or whether because of the directive and because of later Brexit, that therefore they've kept the bits of it that they like, but they've introduced charging because they can make some money out of it, at least recover the costs. Whether that legislation was extended in any way, shape or form over here, now I don't know. Because, as Juan and others often point out, we do tend to copy and paste various bits of legislation into our own. And that is perfectly reasonable because sometimes, obviously, you need harmonisation. So it's a bit difficult if you've got one regulation about safety or something, and then you buy something in the UK that's applicable to that, and then it isn't applicable anymore in the Isle of Man because the regulations then aren't in force.
And who'll be getting to the bottom of this?
Oh, what? Whether it's legal or whether it's not? I don't know. I think somebody will probably have to be asked to do it.
But you just wonder, as I say, Bonzo, I get the impression that the consumer gets guilt-tripped by all this and that it always ends up being our fault and we have to pay for it. If there's a fund of money somewhere that's been paid to cope with this, why doesn't somebody look at it and think that will be, you know, that's a way to sell the whole thing to the public, in that you get free recycling and that, you know, money's been paid for this. You would think somebody somewhere would think it's a good idea to make it simple for the consumer.
But why charge someone once when you can charge them twice? And Tesco's, of course, infamous mantra from its purchasing department, various people about purchasing from farms, etc. It was a policy called somebody else pays. And that, I think, is the idea, that manufacturers and retailers shouldn't have an obligation to actually pick up the tab, even if they've included the money in the price that they've sold it at.
Okay, all right. Appreciate it. Bonzo, thanks for being with us today.
Okay, then. Cheers. Bye.
Good to hear from you. The steam packet, Ben McCree's gone. I'll tell you, the Ben McCree has gone. She was delayed, but there were ongoing repairs. Apparently, during freight loading at Heysham overnight, somebody clanged one of the fire drencher pipes and broke it. So they had to mend the fire drencher, because you can't really go to sea without the fire drenchers working. There was a temporary dispensation received in order to sail overnight. Permanent repairs have taken longer than anticipated. They were welding the pipe on the Ben McCree. So the Ben has gone. The Manxman is still sitting there on sabbatical. And Manannan is merrily going between. Has she left Dublin now? I think she may have left Dublin now. We'll find out more. And I got a note in from, thank you, Michelle Haywood dropped me a note and just said, look, the tarmac around the pole in Onchan is so that the temporary surface and the cones around the pole and five others could be removed. It's a temporary fix, and the pole will not be repositioned until the work starts on installing poles and signs again. The revised proposals are due by the end of September, so it'll probably be sometime in October. This is the famous pole in Onchan. Maybe it's time, says Brian, for everybody only to rent televisions and white goods like we used to. And that way manufacturers, importers and retail agents are responsible for disposing and recycling of the used goods. They can have the expertise and use their expertise for recycling, so renting, not buying. Well, considering how much the price of things like television has come down, and you can gauge how cheap televisions are. And I say cheap, televisions are cheap compared to how much they used to be, in that you remember years ago, maybe 30, 40 years, burglars used to steal televisions. They don't now. And that's when televisions were flipping heavy. They don't now, simply because televisions are really cheap. They're very light, and some are too big, but they're very, very cheap compared to how much they used to be. And as for things like technology's moved on now, but the old VHS players, the old videotape players, used to cost a fortune back in the 70s. When a house would have cost you £2,000, a VCR costs £200, a tenth of the cost of a house. So technology has come down immensely in price. It just seems that we just get caught in the middle, and that we always get, as Bonzo said, why charge somebody once when you can charge them twice? David Wright says, Dick, about what's become of legislation about getting rid of the vans that are over 2 metres high, which are blighting streets and housing estates that were just meant to be there. And this was before the 20 mile per hour limits went up. So there are still some big vans around, and lots of companies are allowing people, or perhaps mandating people, to take vans home to be, quote, on call, purely because they don't have a van depot anymore. I've said many times about fly tipping, literally under the noses of the commissioners in Garth. We have all sorts of rubbish dumped near us, and even in Mackle there's literally a carload of rubbish dumped in one place, including plumbing parts. But worst of all is when you clear it yourself, including, excuse me, if you're eating a dozen dog poo bags, the commissioners complain about what you've done when they're supposed to be doing it. So after picking up all the mess, you leave it, and after another year, another load's there. But if you pick it up, the commissioners send you a letter threatening with prosecution. Is this true? Is this true, Rich? Tell me, have you been threatened with prosecution by Garth commissioners for moving fly tipping? And also, I've had a few questions about the coal tar that's happening at Balfane and what the coal tar is all about. Is this naturally occurring coal tar, or has it been left behind by previous contractors? Apparently, the coal tar is a byproduct of town gas. When town gas was being made, the coal tar was often stored or disposed of on site, sometimes in underground tanks or simply in the ground. Over time, this left behind contaminated land, and because coal tar contains a cocktail of toxic chemicals, including substances that can seep deep into soil and water. So apparently it's all town gas's fault before we got natural gas. Can it be incinerated? Can we just put that coal tar, it's carbon, it'll burn, why don't we just stick it in the incinerator? Apparently it's mixed with gravel, so if they put it in the incinerator, it will create too much bottom ash. When coal tar waste was buried or used as fill, it got mixed with gravel, soil and rubble, which means it isn't just liquid or sludge that you can scoop up and burn. It's gritty, stony mixture. And if you put it in an incinerator, the stones and the gravel don't burn. They'll just turn into bottom ash, and that clogs things up and creates another big waste problem. So instead, the material must be treated or safely buried at special landfill sites. This is what's holding up the Balfane roundabout and things like that. So why can't the existing road contractors just use that coal tar mix if it's got grit in it? Well, apparently it's got long-term health implications, including cancer-causing chemicals. The coal tar is full of substances called polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, PAHs. Now, these are known to cause cancer. They're carcinogenic, and they cause other health problems if people are exposed to them over time. They don't break down quickly, so if you've reused coal tar, the old coal tar from the town gas, in a new road surface, you risk spreading the chemicals into the wider environment through dust, rainwater runoff, or direct contact during roadworks. Get it? Got it? Good.
Corkill, 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 Corkill. Call Corkill Removals and Storage today. Loads big and small, day after day. We'll help you move, we'll help you pack. With a local or global, we've got the knack. So give us a cheer. Yay! Your movers are here. They do it right.
As well as moving locally, nationally or internationally, we have storage solutions from as little as £12 per week. Call
675-495. We'll get your load delivered on time. You can be sure we'll get the job done. Click corkillremovals.com.
Hi, Liz. I see you've had your garage converted.
We're desperate for more room.
Yes. Come through and have a look. John called Manx Property Conversions. We now have an extra bedroom, but it could be another reception room, kids' playroom or office. They also did our conservatory roof last year. We were so impressed, we got them back to convert the garage.
Wow, I need that. What's their number again?
Call MPC on 450500. That's 450500. Or find them on Facebook at Manx Property Conversions.
Quality, economy, that's what we're all about.
Imagine relaxing in your new luxury bathroom with the latest bathroom suite. Or how about a stunning wet room with contemporary designer tiles? Turn your dreams into reality at a price you can afford at Pacesetter. Visit the Pacesetter Bathroom and Tile Showroom, Harris Terrace.
That's what we're all about.
Are you a small charity here on the Isle of Man? Are you looking for volunteers, hoping to raise awareness and chasing those crucial pounds and pennies to support your work? Well, Manx Radio can help. You could be our next 1-3 Charity of the Week. With daily on-air coverage, podcast and social media promotion, we can help support you and those you help. Just email the numbers 123@manxradio.com and listen out for the feature each weekday between 1 and 3 p.m. The Charity of the Week, brought to you by Kell Properties.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Steam packet companies responded to us after facing 14 cancellations and numerous delays in recent weeks. Yesterday, we tried to speak to the steam packet, but they declined to answer questions, including concerns raised by affected passengers. However, the managing director, Brian Thompson, agreed to speak to us, and Christian Jones from the newsroom began by asking Brian Thompson what's changed in the last 24 hours to allow him to speak to us.
I don't know if we said a comment wouldn't be forthcoming. I think yesterday when we got requests for interview, we were actually in the process of dealing with the customers, dealing with the situation initially, dealing with the customers, which is always our priority, and we just weren't available for interview, whereas today I'm here and I'm ready to interview.
But you don't deal with customers. You have a customer experience manager, you have a customer support team.
Yeah, we do. And as I say, they were dealing with the customers. You know, yesterday in particular, they worked very hard, the whole team, to get people rebooked, to get extra vessels on, to gear those vessels up, to crew them, to store them, fuel them. So there was a lot of hard work going on behind the scenes. And yesterday, an interview wasn't the priority, but today I think we can sort of set that record straight.
So how do you think communication has been with passengers over the past 24 hours?
Communication with passengers is good. I think there is a glitch in that system where if somebody's booked through a third party, like a travel agent or something, they perhaps don't receive the communications that we send out.
But obviously we've heard from numerous sources, people texting in, people emailing us, calling us, telling us how poor communication with yourselves has actually been. You've just said that if they go through a third party provider, they don't get that communication. That's not good enough, is it?
Absolutely not. And I think that's something we have to work with these third party companies and make sure that the information is either passed on or we can have direct communication with customers.
14 cancellations in 3 weeks, numerous delays, accusations of poor communication. Can you comfortably sit here right now and tell me that you are providing a good enough lifeline service?
No, we absolutely are not providing a good enough lifeline service, and there isn't a member of the team who doesn't know that. So we are endeavouring to get back to providing the service that we want to.
That's the boss of the steam packet, Brian Thompson, just speaking to us a few moments ago. Peter's with us now. Hello, Peter. Thanks for hanging on. We appreciate it.
That's all right, Andy. It's Peter Murgos here. Just want to speak about Ukraine again. There's been a lot of talk about territory being exchanged, and there's been, no doubt, a deal of pressure being put on Ukraine about that. I think what is necessary is for an understanding. You'd have thought that more people would be aware of this. I'm sure the advisors of governments are aware of this. When Ukraine became independent in 1990, there was a treaty and a constitution established for Ukraine. That constitution was very, very carefully drawn up, and it almost anticipated the events that eventually followed. Now, by the constitution of Ukraine, the borders of Ukraine are inviolate, and Article 2 is very, very clear about that in the constitution. If there was, and certainly ordinary governments of Ukraine can't give away bits of territory because the constitution would prevent that. The only way in which territory could be ceded, first of all, by Article 73, there'd have to be a two-thirds majority in the Ukrainian parliament, which I don't think will be forthcoming, for a referendum to be held. And then there would have to be a referendum which they'd have to win. So obviously the barriers to anything happening are pretty high, and the hurdles they've got to cross. So really, a lot of the conversation, a lot of the stuff that we're reading about in the press about things that are going on or discussions that are being held are extremely premature, and they seem to have overlooked that. Now, people might say, oh, well, constitution, we don't have to bother too much about that. Well, that's very dangerous as well. If I could give you an historical precedent, another one, such as comparable to what I gave last time. In 1839, when Belgium was created, Belgian neutrality was guaranteed by its constitution and also by various European powers. In 1914, when Emperor William II wanted to make his way through Belgium and they weren't willing to grant it, so he forced his way through, he famously called the 1839 agreement guaranteeing Belgium's neutrality as a little scrap of paper.
Right.
And that, of course, has become infamous as time's gone on. It seems to me that when Putin marched into Ukraine, he must have regarded the Ukrainian constitution not in a not dissimilar way. Now, once you start regarding constitutions as a little scrap of paper, I think history has shown very, very clearly of what the results are. And in actual fact, we had two wars. We had the Second World War because there wasn't sufficient resistance to what Germany was doing to Czechoslovakia.
Mm.
And now we have got a situation of what Russia is doing to Ukraine. And I think we'd be well advised to recognize that once you start disregarding a constitution, then eventually you will be compelled perhaps to take action that you had hoped you would avert. In other words, disregarding what are agreed status of a country, invariably it always leads to something worse.
Yeah.
And I must admit that I fear that the current negotiations are going on, which seem to be overlooking a very preliminary point, are likely to lead to the same result.
Well, and the Western world is based on the law of contract and the law of property. So, as you say, if you start disregarding stuff at that level, where does it lead?
Well, it leads to war, and it leads to something 10 times worse. And I would have thought the message from the First World War, when Kaiser William II just disregarded the Belgian constitution, which, although Germany didn't become the Second Empire until 1871, I would suspect that the body that guaranteed that from Germany would be probably Prussia, which was the dominant country, of course, in what we now call Germany. So the German constitution, the German emperor disregarded what had been internationally agreed in 1839. Hitler, of course, completely disregarded what must have been agreed at the end of the Second World War, the First World War, when Czechoslovakia was created. And we must, at our peril, we will disregard what was solemnly agreed about Ukraine in 1990. And so I think that all of Putin's demands should be firmly resisted, and that there doesn't seem to be, alas, on the horizon, that doesn't seem to be a possibility. There seems to be too much loose talk about bits of territory being exchanged, and as I said at the very beginning, that is quite contrary to what everyone guaranteed just 35 years ago.
Okay, appreciate it.
Yep.
Thank you, Peter. Good to hear from you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And let me see. Oh, just regarding the roads, it says 467G, talking of roads and fixing them, I used to see weight limits on roads, yet I don't see weight limits anymore. There are a few, aren't they, on single-track roads. But I see great big wagons fully loaded cutting through on Richmond Road in Ramsey. They must be well over the weight limit for that road. Kevin's hung on for ages as well. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Andy. How are you?
Very good. Yes, thanks.
Good. Just a quick, I've actually got 2 points to discuss quickly. The first one I originally called in was just an update on the training that I was speaking to you about a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
About the gas training and the electrical training. I've been in touch with Julie Edge. I've been in dialogue with Mrs. Edge through emails, and it seems that she was oblivious to the situation just regarding the lack of the electrical training. As you know, the DESC appointed EDS as a training provider to provide the gas certification on Ireland. And I pointed out to Mrs. Edge, well, you've neglected the electrical side. And I spoke to an ECA, that's the Electrical Contracting Association, the ECA representative, a few weeks ago. And it seems that there is no training on the island. And I believe that the AM2 test centre for apprentices is still not operating. And it seems that Julie Edge wasn't aware of this. And I pointed out to her that given gas is actually a sunset industry and gas is a fossil fuel, but you haven't provided electrical training and further certification for the electrical side, which, of course, if you look at solar, that's more of a green industry. I think it's something that she's overlooked. So Juliet said that she would go away and have a think about it and come back to me, but as of yet, I've not had a reply. So we'll wait to see what happens on that front. The second point I was going to raise quickly, Andy, was about the recycling charges on electrical appliances. It's interesting. I took a TV down to the Southern Amenity site. Well, that was last year now. But I was aware of the charges for disposing of televisions. So I dismantled it at home into its constituent parts, plastic, metal, and glass. And when I got down the tip, I was allowed to dispose of it into each area, but I was basically stopped and told it doesn't matter. You, even if you present an appliance dismantled and you dispose of it into its various bins, you still get charged.
Really?
So, yes. So that says to me, it's not a recycling charge; it's a tax. Now, when you buy an appliance in the UK, that tax is already built in, or the waste disposal charge is already built in. But unfortunately, on the island, they can't administrate that, and they have to levy a further charge. Now, if you present an appliance already broken down into its constituent items and still get charged, that's a tax, not a recycling charge. So that's an interesting point.
So how do they know? How would they know if something was broken up? How would they know what it used to be?
Well, I was caught, basically. Yeah. I mean, it was with the best intentions. I didn't know what I was doing was technically illegal, and they allowed me to do it. But I was stopped, and I was given advice along the lines of, it doesn't matter if you're presenting appliance, you still get charged. Well, so that says to me, it's a tax.
Well, I got a note here from Terry, who says he gets the angle grinder out and breaks it up and puts it in the bin at home.
Well, you could do that too. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
thanks for calling today.
All right.
Good to hear from you. Regarding disruption to the steam packet services, I think the Manxman can carry more passengers than the Ben. If therefore the Manxman is fully booked, as it may be this time of year, presumably means not all of those booked on the Manxman can travel on the Ben, says David. Well, going to be fairly full at Heysham and Liverpool, isn't it? And is the Manxman going to be fit for the weekend? We watch, we wait. Thanks to Chris on the phones today. Have a great Wednesday. Back tomorrow at high noon.
WINT